Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to SAT Radio. This is your host, Bob Barber. Tonight we have the beginning of a series of six pre-recorded law classes. Tonight's class, law classes for tribal courts, and the instructor was Judge Naidu. Now, this is the first of six, and I'll run each show on its own date for six consecutive days. So tonight's first one is called Contracts. Now, I remember these classes because I was in each one of them. I am a tribal law student, and I will say that in this series of six law classes that are all pre-recorded this year and since June of 2015, there's a total of about 80, I believe, shows. And we've already gone through 59 shows. Well, this will be the 59th show today. So we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of different classes. You can actually see the ones we broadcasted in our archives here at blogtalkradio.com/ SAT Radio, SATTRADIO. So blogtalkradio.com/ SAT Radio, and you'll see all of the shows that were broadcasted here on Blog Talk Radio. So you're gonna, I hope you have pen and paper ready when I begin the first class. But I do want to say something. If you have any questions or comments, any suggestions, just press 1. And I'll know that you want to say something. In the meantime, get some coffee or whatever you need. Sodas, potato chips, you know, all the good stuff. Because you're going to learn a lot in these next six consecutive days. And you'll know about contracts, the ins and outs, what to look out for, questions you should ask, that kinds of things that you need to know about a contract. Okay, no one's pressed 1, so I'm going to go ahead and begin contracts, and after the class, I'll go ahead and conduct a question and answer period or anything else that's on your mind. So here we go.
Okay, we're going to go deeper into the law. I believe all of you have your notes in front of you. Right, I do.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, the one thing you will have to remember is every contract, compact, covenant, agreement is a private arrangement between yourself and somebody else. Could be a bank to buy a house. It could be a finance company when you want to purchase a car. It could be a student loan. It could be a credit card. It could be anything. You are free to contract with anyone. You're free to buy whatever you want to buy. It's a private arrangement. But here's the rub. things go wrong and you try and open a dialogue with the other party, and invariably you end up in court. In other words,
Ronnie,
you're inviting the government to come into your affairs. I'm going to use that as a basis and as a foundation of what we're going to discuss today. I mean, even when you end up being invited to court and conferred a knighthood as defendant, you're entering into a contract. And the moment someone sues you, you go and hire an attorney, or if you know how to do it, you call yourself the attorney, or you call yourself the defendant, pro se defendant. See how they suck you into their jurisdiction. So how do you respond to that? You do the notice of special appearance, and you tell them, "Hello, Mr. Government, I have no contract with you. I do not wish to contract with you. I never had a contract with you. And I certainly don't want to start having a contract now." But having said that, we invariably end up in their satanic court system. And I must thank Mr. Tom Weidler today for reminding me to talk about how this court dockets are basically securities. Every time you go to court, you file a suit, they stamp your civil complaint, or the plaintiff gets his civil complaint signed and stamped. That's a little code there. It becomes a fungible instrument, a security. And somebody is going to win. It's like a horse race. You know? I've always used this analogy. Someone asked me, "Judge, what are the chances of winning this case?" I told him it's like a horse race. "Oh, you mean," he says, "it's up for grabs." I said, "No." I said, "It's a horse race." He says, "Yeah, can you explain?" I said, "There's only one horse in the race and it's got no legs. You're going to have 20 people carry it to the finishing line. How can the horse lose?" Huh? Now, I asked that in the second part of my submission. Why didn't you establish justice by preparing for the contractual relationship with all the safeguards in place? See, you are the buyer, or you are the seller, or you are the barterer, or you are the exchanger. Okay? You must make it sweet enough for yourself and for the other party. That's called, you see, in a Pareto optimality and a Pareto efficiency. Okay? Pareto, Pareto. It was named after an Italian stallion economist, Wilfredo Pareto.
Mm.
In a Pareto optimality, which is what the judge in a state or federal court decides, in a Pareto optimality, somebody gains and somebody loses. Are you with me, folks? Write that down. Pareto. Pareto optimality. The courts make sure that when the bank wins, now you've been paying your mortgage for 17 years, and then suddenly you lose your job, your wife loses your job, or your husband loses your job, now you can't afford it. You try and do a loan modification. That guy wants your house, he wants your equity. So the fact that you paid for 17 years is not as important with the fact that you did not pay for 10 months. So you lose your house, you lose your equity. Is that justice? I don't call that justice. I call that worse than the Gulag Archipelago. you know, where you'll have to boil your shoe and squeeze your shoe so that you can get some juice out of the shoe to give you your protein intake. That's what the quartz do. And mind you, when you lose your house, they take everything, your equity, your house, your everything. Everybody makes money but you. So why aren't we changing the dynamics? What is stopping us from changing the dynamics? What's stopping us from changing our dynamics is you did not prepare yourself to bargain, to make it sweet enough for you. So now, the Pareto optimality is about somebody gains to another's detriment. The Naidu answer to that is, how about a Pareto efficiency? A Pareto efficiency is where both sides win. Nobody loses. Think about that for a while. Now, that's not something I invented. I give all credit to Professor Wilfredo Pareto. He came up with the Pareto optimality and the Pareto efficiency. I normally attack the court with a Pareto efficiency and say, why does my client have to lose his house and 17 years worth of equity? He's paid more than $280,000. He didn't pay for 10 months. That amounts to like $20,000. Where is the Pareto efficiency? Then the other idiot will come back with, oh, we motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. I just claimed it, you idiot. What do you mean I didn't have a... I'm not stating a claim upon which relief can be granted. The ubiquitous 12b-6. What an idiotic thing. And then 11b says, your claim must be short and concise. You cannot write a novel. So how much can you put in a short, concise statement for the other idiot to come back with a 12b-6 and say, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted? I normally start by saying, the bank engaged in mortgage fraud by not disclosing the features of a securitization process and thereby sustained my claim for unjust enrichment. Now, what am I not claiming? I'm claiming that you unjustly enriched yourself and that you cheated me. If that's not a claim, I don't know what is. Inevitably, those idiots will come back with failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. And the judges will probably go and say, yeah, under the Twombly versus Atlantic Company ruling, yes. You see, decided cases, how dangerous they can be. So whatever you're doing, folks, buying a house, buying a car, getting into a marriage relationship, whatever you're doing, opening a bank account, hazardous for your health. Make sure you have dotted the I's, dashed the T's, and looped the L's and the P's. There is so much at stake where they will throw the Pareto optimality, where you lose and they win. In every contract, add that word. This contract is contemplated under the Pareto efficiency doctrine, where the parties will be restored to the original position in the event this contract cannot be consummated. So if you put in 50,000 and that guy put up an office, you take your 50,000, he takes back his office. Now, if he keeps the office and keeps your 50,000, that is called a Pareto optimality, where one guy gains to the other guy's detriment. That is not justice. That's called Just Us. J-U-S-T-U-S. Just Us. So be very careful when you're getting into a relationship where a contract or even a verbal contract is involved. Having said that, let's get into the elements of a contract, which I have gone through in the past, but I'll go through it again. Now, what is an invitation to treat? You're going down the mall or something, and in the car park, you see a post, you see a sign on a vehicle, for sale, call this number. Now, that's called an invitation to treat, meaning you're just looking and you're inquisitive, right? There's no offer, there's nothing yet. Then you walk into the mall and you go past a couple of shops and says, two suits, $250, two free ties, two free shirts. Now that's called an invitation to treat. Okay, you're just being informed that something is for sale. You walk in and then you say, two shirts, two ties, and two suits for $250. If I buy four suits, will you throw in an extra shirt and an extra tie? Or would you throw in some cufflinks and some studs, for the collar? Now, that is called an offer. In other words, you want to enter into a relationship with the shop. If he accepts your offer, now you have satisfied the second prong of your contract. Now, if you're a 12-year-old, you don't have capacity, because you're a minor. All right? So he will ask, where's your father or your mother? Because you don't have capacity to enter into a contractual relationship. Now, I want to stop there and talk about capacity when you go to buy a house. A lot of things involved here in capacity. First of all, there is a sale and purchase agreement. You have no idea what it means. All right? You don't ask the right questions. You just go ahead and sign every page, initial at the bottom, and at the last page, you put your full name and signature. Now, if you are not familiar with the law, if you're not familiar with what a deed of trust is, you're not familiar with what a trustee does, if you're not familiar why you need a deed of trust, and if you're not familiar most of the time, that the question of title never comes up. Don't you think you have no capacity to contract? Think about that for a while. You're incompetent to contract because you don't know. So that's a very interesting aspect of the elements of contract, in that you have no idea. Generally, you have no idea what you're signing. I had a state judge once tell me he wasn't sure, because the way he phrased that question. But your deed of trust is your title, right? I laughed at him and said, "What? It's a trust document that creates a beneficiary a trustor and a trustee. What do you mean your deed of trust is a title document? It's got nothing to do with title. Then he switches gears and says, no, I meant title insurance. I said a deed of trust is as different as a dinosaur is to a camel. If the dinosaur is a deed of trust, the camel is the title insurance. And a dog is title. They're three different, altogether different animals. That is the level of capacity that is thrust upon you when you want to become a homeowner or home buyer. Actually, you're buying the mortgage note, the debt grip note. So you got to be very careful. Again, when you go to buy a car, what are you signing? You buy a car for $40,000 or $50,000. You take a seven-year loan. For the next 7 years, you're paying the cost of the car that was the original price was set 7 years ago. 7 years into the future, you're still paying. You're not paying the depreciated value of the car. You're paying the original value of the car. You buy a car in 2015, you drive it off the lot. 15% of its value has diminished. And next 5 years, you calculate the price at, let's just say 12% a year. 12 times 5, 60%. If your car was worth 40,000, now your car after 15 years, after 5 years, is worth anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000. But you're paying the monthly, whatever they call it. What do they call it? Your monthly car payments. You're paying $40,000 till you pay off the car.
Installments.
Installments. Thank you. You can tell I never buy anything on installment. So that's why if you need to buy a car, for example, don't buy a brand new car. Go to Enterprise, go to any of these Avis people. They normally write off a car after 10,000 miles. And then you do the math and you tell them, all right, they'll say, $7,500, take it. You just tell them, I got $5,250, that's it. 5250, that's my final offer. Walk away, they'll call you back and say, let's make a deal. Did I say no? If you can help it, try not to buy a brand new car because you're losing. And if you can help it, pay cash. But then you're not paying exorbitant interest. You know, so this is what I mean by capacity. When you contract and you don't know the law, you are an incompetent. You know, you're like a lunatic or a minor. Don't know the law. So you don't have capacity. So that negates the contract. That makes the contract a nullity. This is what happened in the Jesenowski case, U.S. Supreme Court. Jesenowski versus Countrywide LLC. You got to read the case. Don't ask me what it is all about. Read the case, Jesenowski. It's on our website, right, Tom? Hello?
I was unmuted. Yes, it's in the file section.
Okay, so read up the case, then you know what it means. What it means to have capacity. All right? Interesting stuff. Now, the next element is, we are recording this, right? The next element is the intention to be bound and to create legal relationships between the contracting parties. That's a very important, crucial part of the relationship that you're about to begin in a contract. There is an ancient Latin doctrine. The intention of the parties is the soul of the instrument, which is tied up to the Pareto optimality and the Pareto efficiency. Animus homini est anima scriptae. The intention of the parties is the soul of the instrument. So, what was your intention? Why did you give him $100,000? Well, I intended to create wealth. I intended to go into business. So my intention was to go into business, and you don't have to explain. You don't go into business to lose money. You go into business to make money, to create wealth. So that's a given. That's your intention. This guy invented a way to get something done, and I thought, wow, this is the future. You know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs came up with a way to be connected, to have instant communications, instant edification of instant information. Instant. Everything was from no to not, N-O-T, to now. Everything is now, you know? Heck, I'm trying to invent a phone that can call me and, you know, press my clothes and all of that. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you just need a hologram in the future. I don't know. Beam me up, Scotty. Maybe that's going to become real. You know, holograms are real. But coming back to an intention to be bound, all of that, the offer, the acceptance, the capacity, the intention to be bound, these are the strands and the links that make up this chain, so that you will be bound by the terms of the contract. Both sides. F, consideration. This is a very useful, another equally important prong of the elements of contract. Normally you go to buy a house, you go to buy a car, whatever you're going to go and contract, you put the money down. What do they put? You don't see it. That was a great credit river decision. You put your money down, they don't put anything down, and yet you think you got consideration. Very important. What are you giving me? Based on the aphorism, consideration need not be adequate. Give a dollar, like some people do a quitclaim deed for 100,000 acres or 100 million acres or 100 acres, then they say, in consideration of $10. It's just a nominal figure. Consideration need not be adequate, but it needs to be contemplated. It needs to be recorded. It needs to be evidenced. You go buy a house, you don't get to see anything. They get to see your money. You think you get to see their money? Jasinowski. In my opinion, being at this for over 40 years, number G is the most important of all of them. The meeting of minds. It starts when you make an offer. So two suits, two shirts, two ties for 250. Can you throw in an extra pair of cufflinks or an extra tie if I buy four suits? So I get four shirts, four ties. Throw in some cufflinks, please. You don't have to wait for another customer. So there is a meeting of minds right there. Go to buy a car, go to buy a house. Hey, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you what you want. But I don't like that color. Can you change the color? Well, you know what? I'll knock off about $1,000. Like it's really going to happen. But make an offer. We all make an offer. In everything that we do, we make an offer. Any questions with the elements before we move into what can go wrong? Because we're going to go deeper into contracts. Because everything you do, you're driving in the freeway, highway, byway, boulevard, street, road, wherever, back road, country road, ranch road, orchard road, you are in contract. Moment you cycle, walk in the pedestrian curbside, you are in contract with the government. You cross the street, you are in contract with the government. Not expressed, but implied. You go to school, your parents are in contract with the school board. You go to a restaurant, you are entering into a contract with the supplier of food. You walk into Safeway, Albertsons, Costco, Walmart, you're going into a contractual relationship. Go into business, you're getting into a relationship, a contractual relationship. Any questions before we move on to what can go wrong? I open the floor. Unmute yourselves.
Seems pretty clear to me, Judge. We've been through this a number of times. Each time it makes more sense.
Okay, good. Let's move into what can go wrong. The most obvious thing that can go wrong, because there was no meeting of minds, is mistake. Oh, I thought that, but I didn't know this could happen. And now, the mistake is normally discovered after the fact. Let's say you go to buy a used car and you see this word as is. Oh my God, this car is only worth 7,000 and it's got, let me see, less than 80,000 miles. Wow, I got to buy it. Smells good, looks good, I got to buy it. Then you tell the salesman, need to take it for a test drive. Yeah, sure, hop in, here are the keys. And you drive 10, 20 miles maybe, you take it to the freeway, you like it, you come back, you consummate the deal, you're so excited, you didn't even check under the hood. You know, 5 days later, car breaks down. 100% you never check the as-is warranty guarantee. 200% you didn't know what it meant. So now you take it back to the used car dealer and say, you know what? I just can't start the engine. The guy says, oh, well, you bought it as is, sir. What does that mean? Well, what you see is what you get. You didn't tell me that. Well, you didn't ask, sir. You liked it. You said the color was great, runs great. Remember, we went on a drive, we went on a test drive. There was no meeting of minds. You didn't ask all the questions. You didn't ask for a service record. So the salesman, in order to please you, says, well, let my service people have a look at it, but there'll be a charge. Oh, how much will it be? Oh, I don't know. So the part will cost $40 and labor will cost $80. Now you end up paying $120. So you get the car fixed, wow, now it starts. For the next 6 months, it starts, no problem. And then come 7 months, something else happened. You take it back to him. Oh, hi there, Mr. Naidu, how are you? Good, 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 good. Hey, guess what? Car won't start again. What? Oh, guess what? What? The first time you came here, it was the alternator. You know, it wasn't sending a signal to the battery. Now, what the hell do you know about mechanics? Now, your ignition switch magneto is not working. Now, it sounds good. It sounds legitimate. Oh, how much is it going to cost me? Oh, I don't know. You know, Bill at the service is a very nice guy. Yeah, let's take it to Bill, calling Bill. Please answer line two. Oh, Bill. Oh, the Bill comes running. Oh, hi, Mr. Naidu. Takes the car. He says, oh, here's what we found. Your starter motor switch is not igniting the magneto. The magneto is not sending a spark. We need to change the whole thing. So what are we looking at? $280. Oh, my God. Yeah. And labor. Well, you came the last time. You seem to be a nice chap. Dumb chap. We'll do it with less than an hour, 45. Enjoy the coffee. Television is on. So now your starter motor magneto switch is working. It's providing a spark. Your magneto is going. And you drive it back home. You never asked him for a diagnostic. Why didn't you ask him the first time? What else can go wrong with this car? You see how important it is for the meeting of minds?
Mm-hmm.
So, you made a mistake buying the car, and your only recourse is to fix the car because you didn't ask. There was no mom meeting of minds. You didn't ask, they didn't say, and everybody kind of did their own thing. And to cut long story short, if you really like the car, you would end up spending almost $5,000 doing up the car. Welcome to the world of as-is purchases. Now, mistake, that is an honest mistake, but what if the mistake is actually fraud? I remember many, many, many years ago in Seattle, Washington, there was a company called Sound Ford, F-O-R-D. And they had a huge inventory of used cars. And I had a Russian fella in church who used to go and buy cars in an auction. And he used to tell me how Sound Ford buys the same cars and gets him to fix it and then pay him a little bit and then hike up the price and sell it. So this Russian guy, enterprising fella, he went into business for himself. And I started getting clients who were complaining about Sound Ford's cars. So I remembered my old friend, Boris Gorka. Or was it Paul Gorka? Anyway, nice fella. So he came as my expert witness. And one day in court, I accidentally said, Sound Fraud. The Sound Ford's lawyer didn't like it. He said, Your Honor, the judge laughed and said, Counsel, I said, I retract. I was going to say Sound Ford. I don't know why I keep saying Sound Fraud. The jury laughed, and this lawyer wanted the entire jury replaced. And I made sure that I had 12 true and trusted people who bought second used cars. So Sound Fraud got nailed. So fraud is rampant in America when you go buy a house, when you go into business, especially when you go to buy a home. You go to buy a car, there's fraud. But the other guy, the seller, is out to make money. He doesn't care. He'll take $50 as a down payment. He wants to close the deal. So, what can go wrong? Mistake and fraud, in fact, they're one and the same thing. Daytime mistake, nighttime fraud. You know, it's a chameleon. When someone says, I made a mistake, that's a genuine honest mistake because of lack of facts. And then there is a fraudulent intent. So this is why an intention to be bound and to create legal relations cannot be predicated upon a mistake and a fraud. But things can go wrong. I mean, how many people are facing foreclosures? How many people have been foreclosed and evicted? So you got to be extra careful, folks, when you're making a deal. Donald Trump talks about the art of the deal. Well, what does he know? He's just another flim-flam man, glimmer man, you know. Whatever sounds good, looks good, tastes good, you know, that's fine. So be careful when you make a deal, folks. The other thing that can go wrong is non-performance of a contract, which ends up in a rescission. Case in law, case in point, Jesenowski. They could not, they cannot and will not perform that contract simply because Countrywide failed to disclose facts about the securitization of the mortgage note. Talking about securitization, has every one of you read Professor Adam J. Levitin's congressional testimony?
No, I have it on my screen to read.
I did.
I have it.
Okay, read it, because Professor Levitin actually explained it quite simply. You know, and if you want proof that your house was securitized for several hundred million dollars, contact Mortgage Compliance Investigators, Inc. You can Google them. And ask for Damien, D-A-M-I-E-N. Tell him Judge Unaidu sent you. So they will send you a...
Judge, can you repeat that? Mortgage Fraud Investigators?
Mortgage Compliance Investigators.
Thank you.
Let me write that up. MCI. Mortgage Compliance Investigators. So they will send you a document. And this is how the Glaske case, the Ibanez case, and several other cases were handled. Because the plaintiff who sued Glaske, unfortunate for the Bank of America, the mortgage note was not in BOA's name. It was in some other remic. So the wrong guy sued. So Glaske got a bonus. Not only was he not told that his house was securitized to $800 million, his $350,000 house, but the wrong guy sued him. So you must ask for Damien. You must. If you're a homeowner, home buyer, mortgage note owner, invite friends to your house. I bought a new house. It's got a swimming pool, you know. Uh-huh. Make sure you find out from mortgage compliance investigators, the pooling and servicing agreement is what it's called. Pooling servicing agreement. Typing it out for you. And the multiple loan schedule, the PSA and the MLS. Now, they'll send you a 2-inch thick thing issued by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Tell Damien, look, I don't have $2,500, Judge, and I do prepare a $250 version. Can you please help me? Okay? So now, Damien, these guys, they know what they're doing. So the PSA and the MLS, the pooling and servicing agreement, and the multiple loan schedule will tell you how much money the lenders, the potential lenders, the potential buyers of your mortgage note, investors and speculators made on your mortgage note. And your bonus, you get a bonus every month. You get to pay the mortgage. Any specials this month? Yes. Yes. You get to pay your mortgage. Yes. Yes. They made money, but you get to pay your mortgage. Unjust enrichment. Failure to disclose. I challenge you, folks, find out from yourselves and from others. How many times can anyone tell me whether the lender or the guy who sold your house, the realtor, told you about how much money the lenders will make when they securitize your mortgage note? This is why the meeting of minds is very important. I remember a long time ago, my mother was going to go for surgery. So we went and interviewed 10 doctors. My brother is a lawyer. I am a lawyer. We went and interviewed 10 surgeons. And they all said 50-50. One even said 70-30. I said, what's so different about you? He said, well, I've done 235 such surgeries, and about 200 were successful. Uh-oh. So we told Mom, this is what it is. What do you think? She said, well, I'm not in that much of pain. You think medication will help? Well, Mom, it's your decision. And then medication helped. So meeting of minds. You want to get something? Make sure you get 10 quotes. Don't go and buy the first thing you see. Oh, there's a leather jacket going for $150. I got to have it. I don't have a brown leather jacket. I got to buy it. Wilson's Leather, they sell good leather jackets. Well, go elsewhere. Check it out. Could be going for sale, $99. Meeting of minds, folks. Meeting of minds. Right? Now, meeting of minds also means asking for opinions from other people. Well, you've been a homeowner for many months. You mean homeowner for many years? What should I do? What should I look out for? Even the Bible says, you know, that you got to have many counselors. Proverbs 15 verse 22 says, folly is a joy to him who lacks sense. But a man with understanding walks straight. Without consultation, plans are frustrated. But with many counselors, they succeed. 1 Kings 1:12. Now then, let me advise you how you can save your own life and the life of your son Solomon. Proverbs 11:14. For a lack of guidance, a nation falls, but victory is won through many advisors. So, seek advice. Obtain guidance. Don't just go gung-ho and say, I got to have that. See, what you want and what you need are two different things. You need a car, but you want an airplane. Can't afford an airplane, you got to buy a car. But looking at the 10th Amendment, thou shalt not covet. How come Donald Trump has got a jet and I don't? Well, so what? Go into business for yourself. Find a niche. So non-performance, we're still talking about what can go wrong. Non-performance is one of those areas where you just cannot complete the contract. Give you an example. You buy a plot of land, you buy 5 acres, you want to build a mansion, you want to build a Olympic-sized swimming pool, and the civil engineer, the contractor comes, starts digging holes, and now you have a major earthquake, and the stupid fault line goes right through your property. And the guy says he'll complete your house in 10 months. And 80% of the way, the work was completed. And at the 8th month, this earthquake comes and destroys everything. There is no way that he can perform the contract. So what do you do? You sue God, you sue the devil, or you sue the contractor. Who do you sue? So that's what non-performance means. Now, I'll have to take a break there for today, because in about 30 minutes, I have to be in a very important meeting. So let's throw open this forum for any questions up until where did we stop? Non-performance. Right. Have you folks gone through your sale and purchase agreement, your deed of trust, or if you have a question, go ahead and shoot.
Judge, this is Sandy, and I have a question.
Yes.
So when you reach out, or whatever the protocol is, to MCI to get a copy of your pooling and services agreement and the multiple loan schedule, did you say they charge you a fortune for that?
Yeah. That's why you got to tell him, Judge Naidu sent you, can you do a $250 version? I wrote out a simple contract for them. Because all you need to show the court is that this property was indeed securitized and how much it was securitized to. You don't need to pay $2,500 for it. But have a chin wag with MCI anyway.
And don't yell if I'm asking the wrong question. But because it's a securitization, do you have a right under Freedom of Information Act to obtain that information from them without any cost?
Did I mention the FOIA?
No.
No.
So why are you mentioning it?
Do they know you firsthand that if I said Judge Naidu sent me and I want you to do it for $250 only, that I'm going to get
maybe
it for $250 only?
Why don't you just go ahead and make a call, and if they get difficult, mention my name.
Okay. Okay, I get it. Thank you.
See, I get into trouble every time. I get into trouble every time I stick my neck out. So I'm not going to get. Stick my neck out no more for nobody. Next question.
I have a question, Judge. This is Ron.
Hello, Ron.
I have an adhesion contract from a garbage company. They send the same one out to everybody. I cross off things that I don't like on there and tell them I won't, like, pay this fee, and I initial it. They want a 5-year contract. I cross it off and put a 1-year contract. Will that hold up?
Yeah.
It will hold up?
Well, have you signed it? Have you both agreed?
Well, I signed it and send it back to them. They don't send nothing back that they didn't agree.
Well, then move on. Sign a contract, not an adhesion contract, with someone else who's willing to go with the Pareto efficiency.
Okay.
Use the Pareto efficiency, the specific performance on this contract, shall be pursued under the Pareto efficiency. Google Pareto efficiency, and that's it. They
okay.
don't agree, move on, move on, move on. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, folks, an adhesion contract is one, A-D-H-E-S-I-O-N. A-D-H-E-S-I-O-N. An adhesion contract is a contract that favors only one side of the bargain. Most sale and purchase agreements are adhesion contracts. Next question, please.
Judge, this is Shirley Stewart. Once we get the pooling and service agreement and MCI information, could you? What do we do with that? Just have it for our own?
No, but aren't you going to fight this in a court of law to prove that they securitize your property with no benefits coming to you?
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I didn't know if we, okay.
Well,
so
that's the whole idea of getting the sale and purchase agreement, I mean, the pooling and servicing agreement.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
To prove.
Okay.
Yeah, to prove. Now, some people can't afford it. So what you need to tell the judge, if you're going to state court or federal court, if they have hauled you up there, and if you agree to be the defendant, is to tell the judge, I can get this thing, but it's going to take me time. I don't have $2,000 to pay.
Mm, okay.
You know, so, yeah.
That's
convince the judge.
Okay, that's good. Thank you, Judge.
Okay. Next. Somebody remind me next class where we stopped. Non-performance, huh? Anyone else? Okay. If it's if everybody happy with it, keep reading. We'll see you on Monday. Oh, sorry, your Tuesday.
No, your Tuesday, our Monday.
Okay. Good night. Goodbye. Good day, everybody.
Thank you, Judge.
Night, Judge.
Well, there you go. That's the first of six law classes on contracts. This one was entitled Contracts. So what does anybody have to say about what you heard? Did you learn anything new? Are you surprised by some of the information that was said by Judge Naidoo? You're on the air. Go ahead and make your comment. If there are no comments, I'll go ahead and end the show for today. See you tomorrow with another contract class. Thank you.